Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to talk to you this morning about the... beginning and continuing possession, how you audit it, why you should, and what you shouldn't do. The rudiments we have pretty well recovered, and now let's take a good look here at the actuality of auditing itself. The first step in actual auditing, as such, is the present time problem. This comes before one attempts the first level of auditing and is done really in conjunction with starting a session. Here we have an interim step which gives you something to talk about while you are starting a session with the preclear. Got that? We can be fairly certain that the preclear's interest is on his own present time problems. We can be sure of this. In other words, we have an area of interest, and we can exploit this area of interest in order to begin an expansion of his area of interest. Auditing could be said to be a process which raises the ARC of an individual, therefore the extension of communication by an individual into his environment is absolutely necessary. And if we look at this as a gradient scale, we discover that his interest is normally fixated upon himself quite markedly, and next upon his present time problems, and next upon the persons and locale in which he has existed, not in which he exists, which he has existed, and then upon the locale in which he is existing, and so we can extend his area of interest. It is notable that the material in which he has been interested is represented in terms of pictures and facsimiles, and is not represented, as far as he is concerned, by solid mist. It is not solid objects and spaces there anymore. The battle he fought in the early 13th century has long since gone to dust, as far as he is concerned. And we don't want him getting back into this battle. Well, he will try to get back into the battle because it was interesting. Battles are normally interesting. Then let us look at a preclear as a gradient scale of interest to be extended into the present and future. If we see this clearly, we see that the preclear's ability to communicate depends upon his ability of free choice of communication into his present time and future environment. Now, if you can just look at a preclear as a small spot which you are expanding in concentric circles out into the environment, you have it. Somewhere we must engage his interest. One of the best places to engage his interest, completely aside from technical and mechanical reasons, is the present time problem. This ordinarily is entirely dependent upon past problems. He's fixated on the past problem. He has a present time problem to get a datum of comparable magnitude by which he hopes to run out the past problem. The way an individual is solving his past problems in picture form, which are long gone, is to get into the same amount of trouble in present time. And if he can do this, then he gets a match terminal and runs out the past problem. Follow me. This is the mechanical procedure which he is following. His interest is apparently, then, on present time problem. But remember, his interest is not really on the present time problem. It is on a past problem and then the present time problem. You should see this very easily, then. We're extending a sphere of influence, but we are primarily, as far as auditing is concerned, extending a sphere of interest. And as we extend this sphere of interest, the preclear will come along with us and work well. if we do not extend this sphere of interest, now understand I'm talking about interest. I'm not talking about the necessity to do this because there's something wrong with him. I'm not talking about the innate, inherent, cooperative nature of the preclear. These things don't exist. I'm talking about finding a sphere of interest and then extending the sphere of interest. And the map is, sphere of interest is, as far as you are concerned, on the past, on the present time problem. And that's about as far as it goes with the average preclear. Follow me? This is where and how an auditor succeeds or fails. It's right there. It's right there. It isn't the beauty with which he holds his right hand little finger in the air as he audits. It is definitely the degree to which he enlists pleasantly the preclear's interest in his case and continues and expands that interest outward, as-ising, knocking apart, resolving the more intimate problems, the things of near proximity, and extending the interest further and further out. And finally, when he's extended the interest all the way out, he will have a very, very interested preclear indeed. And more than that, he will have a preclear who exceeds then interest. But unless he follows this on a basis of interest and pleasant interest, he will not get the preclear in session. Now we find that level one puts the preclear's attention on people, objects, merely spots them, then discovers their separateness from the preclear, and the preclear separateness from them, and then discovers what the preclear does not know and what these objects and people do not know, all on a spotting basis. In other words, the totality of level one is an orientation, locational series, the entirety of it. And it's a gradient scale. Actually, the gradient scale is exactly this. Spot an object, a spot a person, separateness from an object, object separateness from the preclear, preclear separateness from the person, person separateness from the preclear, spotting these people in the environment, you understand, and then the preclear's lack of knowingness about objects, object's lack of knowingness about the preclear, preclear's lack of knowingness about people he spots, and then the lack of knowingness of the people he spots about the preclear. And that is the gradient scale, the exact gradient scale of what we call today level one. We have had in the past six basic processes, but these processes are none of them as powerful or as close to a gradient as we have now in these levels. And I call your interest to the fact that we have six levels of processing. These levels are actually an extension of interest and ability. And in locational processing, we have the most fundamental of activities in which this preclear can engage. Now, there is enough mechanical material in the first level for an auditor to get a mediocre result, even if he doesn't know his business. He merely knows the commands. See, he could go out and have the preclear spot objects and spot people and get separatenesses and not knowingnesses and so on, and he would get a result of sorts. You understand that? But this wouldn't make him a good auditor. This wouldn't make him a good auditor at all. Because something would be lacking in the auditing sessions. And the something that would be lacking is very, very easy to trace. He has not enlisted the interest of the preclear. That's the first and foremost lack that would be found when a poor auditor is auditing. A preclear's interest has not been invited. a lower-than-mediocre auditor would not challenge the preclear into action. He would simply run the whole thing there without any sense that the preclear didn't quite know what was happening, was sort of bored about the whole thing. So that's a little bit lower. And below that is the auditor enforcing the preclear's interest. And lower than that is the auditor inhibiting the preclear's interest. Now, when I say enforcing the preclear's interest, you see, you could do something like shove a pin in the preclear and say, you see, there is a contact there. See that? You could promise him direful, horrible results unless he had a casectomy. Numerous things that you could do which would slam a preclear into action. But let me assure you, merely running a slightly bored, disinterested, a little bit out of ARC preclear is better than any of those methods. See, that's better. I mean, just to sort of mechanically run a session, you get better results. It's better than holding a gun on him and say, all right, you, audit that, or I'm going to mow you down. The reason husband and wife teams don't work occasionally you find a husband and wife team where this is going on. Unless you let me audit you, I will leave you. See, this is the duress. You get the idea? Well, that, bluntly, is for the birds. Hasn't any business in auditing. Remember, what you're trying to do is increase the preclear's sphere of interest. You're not trying to eradicate or wipe out or erase the preclear. You see these different slants. Now, any of us has observed one of these lower methods in operation at one time or another in Dianetics and Scientology. And they just don't work, that's all. Now, the ARC is the clue. And the clue of ARC comes into immediate apparency the moment auditing is started. There is this about it. An expansion of existing ARC is necessary to make the case progress. And if the case is not progressed from existing ARC upwards, then we have simply made a new road from some lower depth into which we forced the preclear. You understand? And we're running the road between that lower step, an undesirable point, and the existing ARC of the preclear, you see. We've lowered his tone in order to increase his tone. Why should we ever bother? Just leave him alone. He'll better ARC than that he has dropped to under duress. Follow me now. Don't challenge him, hammer him around, pound him, and so forth. No. Now, the best auditing, the very best auditing, is done by enlisting the preclear's interest and bringing about a state of mind on his part that you are engaged with him in a cooperative endeavor to increase his ability to communicate with and control his environment. Now, that is the best point of view from a standpoint of the auditor. It achieves better results. It is not a spectacular. For years, we have had people with us who consistently and continually mistook an effect for a result. The preclear sat and screamed for an hour, and they say, boy, that's something, that's a real good technique. Now, that is an effect. You can always create an effect on somebody. You don't have to work to do that. Go get a gun and shoot them. You don't increase their ARC by doing so, however. Now, a result is taking the existing ARC of the PC and increasing it gently on up scale. And that's the way you make clears. Now, wherever and however we look at the subject of auditing, we discover that where we neglect the affinity-reality communication triangle, we also have neglected the preclear. We are probably running some sort of mass. And the mass that we are running may or may not be of interest. The mass that we are running may or may not be the preclear. Now, if we were studying physiology, we would say the mass we are running is the preclear, and thereby would make a terrible blunder. We can do anything we want to the mass of the preclear, and we might engage a little higher tone by making him feel a little better. But the chances are that we will probably depress his tone. The chances are. Now, wherever we have duress, challenging, out of ARC auditing, we depress the ability of the preclear. We turn off his perceptions and we do everything else. You follow me? So what is the right way to go about this? We can talk about a lot of wrong ways. I'm merely pointing them out to you because they are wrong ways, and you will see them occur here and there with, a book auditor, people who have no training, people who have a background as a slave master of some sort or another. I imagine the... You can see Dianetics Scientology used as though they were being used by a screw in a penitentiary, one of the guards, you know. You can just think of the way he might use these things. You can think of the way that some galley captain might have used these things. You see, there are uses to which you can put an unlimited knowledge of the mind. There are many uses to which you can put this, but the use we're putting it to is auditing by individuals and groups, and that's a little bit different use, you see. So anyone's interest is invited to an increase in ability, because in that way we get a resolution of the existing difficulties. Of course, if you want to create difficulties, you suppress the preclear, you push him down scale, you challenge him, you upset him, you put him under duress, you knock him apart, and the next thing you know... Well, I'm not sure what you've got, but it's an effect. It's an effect. It's not a result. Also, the effect you've now created will probably kick back in this universe with remarkable velocity. All right. How do you enlist preclear's interest? This is important. It's important to all of us. How do you enlist preclear's interest? Well, you find out what his interest is really on. And you expand it from that point. That's awfully elementary, isn't it? But it's the basic law of getting a preclear into session. You find out what his interest is on and expand it from that point. Now, what he's calling interest may not be what you would call interest. Fixated horror. That's interesting. That'd be interest as far as he was concerned. All right. You normally start working with him on the basis of his present time problem. Normally. If he has come to you for help. All right, let's say that again. If the preclears come to you for help, you start work with the present time problem and you establish those rudiments of the session while doing so. Got it? That's very easy. How about the preclear who didn't come to you for help, that you went to help? Different flow, isn't it? Well, now, the best handy Jim Dandy little tool I know of for doing this is to take a little bit deeper fact of interest. His interest is probably, undoubtedly, in the past. There is his interest level. It may be one or another part of the past, but it's certainly on the past somewhere. This we can count on. In the first place, he is so far gone, he wouldn't even come to us for help and doesn't even know help is there. So when you go out to help somebody, it is a maxim that, regardless of how it appears at first, you are actually approaching a case in worse state than the person who comes to you for help. Now, if you just think of the most dismal, plowed in, upset, neurotic, or psycho case that ever walked up to you and said, "Help me," you have the bottom of the scale, which is the top of the scale of the people who haven't asked for help. I hate to have to say this. It sort of makes it a revengeful attitude toward these people who don't ask for help, you see. But we are dealing here with men and women. We are dealing here with people who are involved every day in problems and activities of one kind or another in the world, who are under duress of one kind or another, and these people are evidently incapable of knowing that any knowingness is possible, and that is the monitoring element. It is measured straight against their attitude of knowing. You just look over their attitude of knowing, you find the people who come to you for help, even though they are stark, staring, mad, have still come to you for help. So they still know that somebody knows, or that they can feel that maybe somewhere somebody knows. Maybe you aren't it, but you're there, and you might let them down and probably will, but at least they know that somebody else knows something. Now, let's start at that as the bottom level, and we look at the people who won't ask for or receive aid or assistance of any kind, and we find, and this sounds to you at first like a horrible generality, but I think you will find it borne out, you'll find that they start with this raving madman that came to you for help as their top level. They do not know that anybody can know. And they're sort of self-sufficient when you see them, and they don't seem to be troubled in life. They're sort of self-sufficient automatons. You go around, you talk to them, and you say, "Well, we have something new here that's of interest, and in your immediate environment, you could probably use some information that has been developed on the human mind and so forth." And they say, "Nyeh, nyeh, 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 nyeh." They know you don't know. They know nobody knows. Yeah, this fellow might be a business executive. He might be evidently quite successful. Quite successful. If this man is trying to get anything done in the world, he's trying to get it done with people. And if he's trying to get it done from the attitude that nobody knows anything about people, except maybe he might know a little bit about people, he thinks. He's not getting anything done with people. You will find the most remarkable boo-boos in this individual's vicinity. It'll just be gorgeous. Don't lift the lid of that pot. Don't pick up the corner of his bladder. If you're allergic to looking at chaos, you have to spend a lot of time and be very persuasive towards some individual as an auditor. In the first place, his wife has come to you for help, and you've audited her. And you know that she's going to go back into this environment, and wham, see, and it's not going to work out. And you know, to some slight degree, from her case, that his conduct is less than optimal. And you know that there's got to be a little understanding on his part, too. Now, we're not in the business of breaking up marriages. So in order to do something about this, you just as an ethical problem,
should get a hold of this guy.
You did give her some of it. You really should get a hold of this guy and do something there. Why? Because why work on the wife if she's going to stay in that vicinity, see? Why work on her at all? Why not just leave her in her mild state of agony? Because she's going to be suppressed and depressed one way or the other. She's living cheek by jowl or something like that. And we go to see this guy, and he knows it's his wife. He knows this, and that's his highest level of knowingness. He knows that it's his wife who is at fault for everything that has ever happened. He knows it's her state of case, the reason things don't run well. And he hasn't even the wit to understand or believe that any adjustment could take place in himself. Brother, the raving madman who came to you and asked for help is above tone on this other individual. He is a cold stone at best. You got it? You understand a little bit better what I mean when I say the people who don't come to you or who won't take any aid or assistance from you with what you know are worse off than the people who come to you for help. You got that? When you, without invitation, start working on somebody and you find out that they really don't believe anything can be done anyhow, or that you know anything, you've got, to some slight degree, a job cut out for you. And what is the best way to handle this? What is the very best way to handle this? Well, the very best way hasn't been invented yet. I'll need another week or two to figure this out. But we have a very good way. Here is a great oddity. We have an enormously well expanded, signposted science that we are not using. It is the darndest organization that anybody ever wanted to study. We have the entire field of Dianetics, which is different than Scientology. People come along and they say, well, Dianetics, Scientology, well, just change their names. That's it. See, why not identify across the boards? Dianetics is a science, and it is a science which mainly concerned itself with, but had a good look toward the other dynamics, but mainly concerned itself with the first dynamic. See, its techniques and technologies were definitely on the first dynamic level. It was developed out of first dynamic materials, which were then applied to the rest of the dynamics. Now, its concentration was right in close to home. We couldn't have advanced an inch into Scientology without Dianetics. And Dianetics has been lying there gathering bread mold. And it's about time that you picked it up and used it as a tool to pry the people who have no knowingness that anything can be done out of their pleasant or unpleasant little rut. You can do remarkable things with the command of Dianetics over the mechanics of the reactive mind. Now, Dianetics stresses, works with, goes into the mechanisms of the reactive mind. Also, to some slight degree, into the analytical mind. It almost totally neglects the whole aspect of the awareness of awareness unit. It mentions it, talks about it, and describes it. And that's the end of it. Scientology entirely ignores grandly the more complicated aspects and technologies in which the reactive mind is involved, and works entirely and completely with the awareness of awareness unit, the analytical aspect. Got it? You got two sciences which are face to face, and one has as its subject matter the reactive mind, and the other has as its subject matter the analytical mind. And if we call these things both the same science, we would have a tendency to neglect, then, the singular and vast difference. And neglect the singular and vast difference between these two ends of the same spectrum. One covers the upper end, one covers the lower end. Well, now listen, if you're going at one fell swoop to connect this individual up with the rationalities of existence, with his analytical mind, and so forth, you're going to ignore something if you're going to try to do that. If you try to connect up with his awareness of awareness unit, you are going to at once fail. Because this individual doesn't know that anything can happen or anybody can know. And therefore, his totality of knowingness is connected with energy, mass, and interior spaces. And that will be where he is. He is being told everything by energy in his bank and everything else. He is an animate, reactive mind. And you can always interest the reactive mind in itself. Let us take a lesson from the evolution of these two sciences and see that the widespread and immediate interest in Dianetics had a tendency to cone off the further we went past the boundary between Dianetics and Scientology and the further we went into Scientology. We got less and less public response, didn't we? Why? Because we had more reactive minds than we had analytical minds. Follow me? And an awful lot of people didn't come along with us. They just didn't come along with us, that's all.
They said engrams, oh, nice old engrams. Yeah. If you just have one engram echoing back against another engram, with me as another engram, all of us going round and round in a beautiful, beautiful circle, we'll all be happy. Well, they're happy, but the rest of the world was not happy.
We have dropped fellows by the wayside. And we've dropped them by the wayside because we've exceeded their level of interest and understanding. The science has progressed faster in many cases than the ARC has been increased in people who were originally interested in it. And that's because we had to go to the top to look at the bottom again. And now we're at the top, let's look at the bottom and let's use it. With malice aforethought. Let's sharpen up our already not dull wits, and utilize anything and everything we know in the field of Dianetics. With this proviso, that we go very lightly to the public on what we today call parascientology. That actually was first discovered in the realm of Dianetics. And we use current life, Dianetic phenomena to interest the cases that are not very interested in anything. They can get interested in this. You can practically knock their silly heads off. Because there's where their interest is fixed. Now let's go back, think about the earlier part of this lecture. I said that the sphere of interest, the exact sphere of interest of the individual, was upon himself. That must be an awfully coned-in thetan to have the interest on himself. He must already be gathering up into an energy ball. But he does. He has his interest on himself as a thetan, and his next interest is upon the past, but that is not very visible to thee or me. And his apparent next interest, as we expand this sphere, is upon the present time problem. But in between the present time problem and the interest on himself, is this sphere of interest on the reactive mind, in which we have the past represented and coacting with itself. And so,
if we find that we cannot interest our preclear in this outer sphere of the present time problem, we must assume he is then anchored in the past. And if he didn't come to us, we must assume that he is so unresponsive to knowingness at large and in general that he cannot comprehend anything more than a past datum. He cannot comprehend a present time datum. He will tell us, well, nobody could suddenly come along and think up any new material about the mind. It's all been covered. You know? Well, that tells you at once that the individual must be giving credence to the past. This must be where he sits. He tells you, Casablanca thought of all that. There is a definite statement in the Kabbalah which says that theta is the cube root of phi, and whereas theta in that case is used as a mathematical symbol to represent the amount of water flowing down the Nile, nevertheless the word is used and therefore the material is all old. That's an awfully reactive thing, but that's the way they think. Well, how would you then use Dianetics? Current lifetime, original thesis and first book Dianetics, to spark these individuals into view. You can almost always do it. I have never failed yet, one way or another, to interest people in Dianetics and in Dianetic phenomena. Never yet have failed in this case. I had one attorney who was absolutely certain that life and so on had long since been demonstrated as an unsolvable problem, and that was conclusive, and there was nothing to be learned about life at all, and it was all wrapped up into a complete mystery, and that solved it. You know, this was the way he was thinking, and he was very snide, as a matter of fact, extremely snide about Dianetics, and was himself at that moment involved in an hostile action toward Dianetics. And I sat there with one elbow on his desk looking at him with innocent blue eyes. And 15 minutes later he said, if this is Dianetics, maybe something has happened in the universe. Maybe we ought to leave you alone. Not because he'd become afraid of me, but because he'd found out there was phenomena of which he had no knowledge whatsoever. I used as a demonstration on the thing simply getting him to look at a picture and then getting him involved in more and more sticky pictures of one kind or another and then getting him uninvolved with these pictures. Here was a hostile frame of mind. When he finished up, he had good ARC with me. I saw him several times afterwards, and he was always very polite. Not because he's afraid of me, but he was respectful toward me, very friendly. Have a cigarette, you know. And this fellow had been all set to mount his little mud-colored burro and dash off to the wars to slaughter all of Dianetics as being a horrible hoax. What do we do? I found where his interest actually sat. His interest sat actually in the past. And I found the past area in which he was interested, and then found the pictures of the past that he didn't know he had and showed them to him. You follow me? I mean, this is very interesting that a completely hostile frame of mind, utterly stupid, a man was connected with law. Imagine this. The totality of law and the motto behind it is precedent shall prevail. It is in itself an engramic subject. It is an animated engram. Well, it says this law has been on the books since 1751 and therefore is a true law. You understand? Now, this other law has only been on the books since 1928 and therefore probably is worthless. This is reason. This is reason in law. We see lawyers going up before the bar of justice and talking to each other about decisions that were made.
Oh, no. These men are there to make a decision. And all they get is second-hand decisions, third-hand, fifth-hand. And the more removed they are from the present time, the better the decision is, see? They come up with some juicy decision which had nothing to do with the case at hand, which was arrived at in 1801, and they say, well, now, well, I'm licked. I'm licked. The client, you know, and the plaintiff and the defendant are standing there, and they're saying, oh, wait a minute, we were trying a rent case. And we've completely departed from the whole subject, and we find out now the fact that the tort was not written in the form of a brief in accordance with Malthus or somebody. You see, has immediately invalidated the whole thing. And the case is thrown out of court, and they keep waiting to find out when the rent case is going to be tried, you know, as to who owes who what rent. And they're told it's all been dismissed. I mean, I may be exaggerating it slightly, but law seldom talks about any of the material at hand. I'm not doing this to abuse law. They're getting the maximum agreement from the maximum backtrack. And when the fellow knows that you don't know anything, the only way you will get any agreement with him whatsoever is finding out where he's interested in the backtrack and then showing him something about it. There are two ways to do this, both of them very, very simple. Both of them extremely simple. One of those ways is more simple than the other. Where he has a picture, you can show him a small lock. You can pick up the last time he hurt himself. You can show him he has a picture of it. You can describe pictures to him. And when he tells you, well, as long as you don't know about them, they won't hurt you. And you say, well, the only reason they stick to you at all is because you don't know about them. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? You realize that is why the picture sticks to him. He saw it, he had it, and now he doesn't know about it at all. Now he knows a little bit about it, and now crash. It's set up as a triggered mechanism. You might as well trigger him. They're already trigger anyhow. When he gets 5 or 10 years older, they'll trigger on him. Pick up one of these. Pick up a set of pictures in a sphere of interest, showing to him, talk to him about them. Get him to run them out any way you want. Throw them away. Do something with them. Turn on a somatic. Turn it off. Find the last time he hit his hand or hurt his hand. Find the picture of it. Run him through it a couple of times. Turn it on. Turn it off. He'll say, wow. There's something going on here I know not what of. And that will be his highest cognition. But this is a cognition. And he will then let you audit him. Well, I don't say stick him on the backtrack. Just pick up light material, discuss him about engrams, locks. Talk to him about this. Talk to him about Dianetics. You don't even have to say it's Dianetics. And then you have the other case, the case that has no pictures at all. The oddity is he knows he ought to have them, only he's gone downscale to a point where he doesn't have pictures anymore. And where this is coupled with the unknowingness about you or that anybody could know, it becomes a little more difficult problem. But you can still ask this fellow what he is looking at. You see, the very attitude which you employ, you say, well, now, we ask the fellow to, close your eyes and tell me what you see. And you say, well, now, think of a cat. All right, close your eyes and tell me what you see. And he says, picture of a cat. See, you got it. Then you just talk to him about locks and various things. And you can go so far as to be very surprised that he has pictures. You explain about pictures and talk about them and be a little bit upset maybe that he does have them. You get interested in his case, I guarantee. Now, the other fellow, you find out, you say, now, just think of a cat, you see? And, all right, close your eyes. Now, think of a cat. Now, do you see anything? The fellow says no, and you say you don't. And he'd be very surprised and upset that he doesn't have a picture. You see, he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. Talk to him about this. This is a serious lack. You get the idea? Well,
Actually, his machinery's broken. He is having a rougher time. Now, by the way, a Thetan who is up against a reactive bank, which is broken down, is not necessarily in bad condition himself. Do you understand that? I mean, you can have a totally blacked out, plowed in reactive bank, and a Thetan who is not in this foul a condition, and what'll we get? It's very simple. We'll get a... He knows that more ought to be going on than is going on. He's looking at the reactive bank, but he is able and active himself. Here's the idea. The body is one thing, the Thetan is another thing. And that body is not necessarily the Thetan's body, you see. Now, we can have another case where an individual, as a Thetan, is in poor shape and has a reactive mind which is in excellent condition. Now, you get what we used to call the wide-open case. You know, they could run anything, but you'd run out mayhem and slaughter and everything else, and the case wouldn't change, even vaguely. Well, there was hardly anybody home. You know? We all know this phenomena from the old days of Dianetics. Well, here then, it doesn't necessarily follow that your preclear has a bad case because he has a black bank, and it doesn't follow that he has a good case because he has a bright pictured bank. It does follow that if he doesn't know that anybody else could possibly know anything, he's nuts. See? It does follow. That follows. So you see, the various conditions of pictures do not necessarily regulate the condition of the person. You follow me closely on that. Therefore, and thereby, you are at total liberty to interest the individual's interest in that sphere where it is naturally fixated. And if the individual doesn't know that anybody else could know, we assume then he is relatively incapable of reason and therefore is probably stuck someplace on the back track. So he's interested in himself, in the back track, and in the present time problem in that order. And if he isn't interested in the present time problem, isn't interested in being audited, isn't interested in the session, then we assume he's interested in the backtrack. If he were not even interested in the backtrack, we wouldn't be talking to him. He would be a round ball of energy falling in on itself with a stupidity in the center. See? He wouldn't be a Thetan, he'd be a BB shot. Well, now, do we get the gradient scale of interest? If you know this, if you know that you should gently and smoothly handle a case and increase its ARC all the way up the line, you will know then that you must elicit the preclear's interest where the preclear's interest exists and then extend it outwards. After you've unlocked somebody from the back track, it is very easy sometimes to solve some of the more interesting present time problems. Do you know that there are a lot of people walking around who have present time problems of the size of a hurricane that they're simply neglecting? You know, they're saying, ta. You know, they've got 4 kids to feed and a pretty definite sphere of responsibility, their job and everything. And the kids are going to the devil, and the jobs are going to the dickens, and everything they got's going to pieces. And they once had a car, and that thing standing there with 4 wheels under it certainly doesn't look like a car now. You know, everything's going to pieces. In other words, they have a superfluity of present-time problems. Well, if they're in this kind of a condition, they're not interested then in present-time problems, are they? They must be interested in backtrack, mustn't they? Huh? They must be interested in the past, and that past could be represented by pictures or by absence of pictures. And if you make either one of these factors a mystery, you've got him in session. You know, make either one of them a mystery. If he hasn't got pictures, well, you don't tell him so, but boy, you sure demonstrate to him that he really ought to have them. If he's got them, you say, you have them? Oh, no. You know? That sort of thing. Play these two aspects against each other. Get his interest on this item of pictures, you can actually unlock one of these guys off the past track. There are more ways to bring somebody into present time than you can count. There are lots of ways. I would say that probably by interesting him in pictures, you would get him off of some of them, and you'd probably bring him more closely into present time than he was before. So we can handle now the fellow if we use this sort of an approach. Even the insane, by the way, the insane are stuck way back on the track ordinarily, and quite often can simply be told to come to present time and get sane again. See, out of the picture band. We can take this individual who doesn't come to us, and we can talk to him about this sort of thing. And it doesn't matter if we have to back up the hearse. As far as he's concerned, we'll eventually get his interest going on this subject, and having gotten his interest going with ARC, understand, not by plunging him into birth and doing all sorts of horrible things to him. We get his ARC going, we can build him up from that point to a point where he will actually face a present time problem. Where present time problems don't surrender, the preclear's not interested in him. See, he's not even interested enough to do anything about it. You get the idea? Well, therefore, starting a session depends on one good intention on your part as an auditor. Two, a good knowledge of Dianetics and Scientology, good working knowledge. Three, depends on your ability to handle modern processing. Four, depends on an expanding sphere of interest on the part of the preclear. And five, depends on his environment remaining relatively unupsetting during the period of auditing. Factors always with us. Now, if somebody is being chewed up all the time he's being audited, you better find out who's chewing him up, and if possible, get that person into session. And then we really have to get skilled. If the first person came to us, and then we have to go find the second person to audit him, now our skill really comes into play, because this person doesn't know that anybody else knows. He's probably sitting as an only one, that the person who knows of all people in the world the only thing that is known, which is nothing. He knows nothing. He knows that there isn't anything to know, and so on. Well, our skill is challenged when we meet this person, our skill in getting him into session. He is so difficult to get into session that getting somebody into session who is interested in the subject is no difficulty at all in comparison. And if you have any difficulty getting somebody into session who is already interested in the subject of Dianetics and Scientology, for the love of Pete, you must be having a horrible time. Here we have, in essence, a structure in these processes, a structure of understanding itself, but we have, more importantly, a bridge between past and present. We have a bridge between auditor and preclear. We have a number of connections of one kind or another. And we have the bridge between the preclear and the wider environment. There are these lines, you might say, in action. And in clearing up these things and straightening them up, making these lines run straighter, we are, of course, going to win. There's no doubt about that. If we take the bridge from the preclear to the present time problem, does not exist. It must be then a bridge from the preclear to the past, from the past to the present time problem, but that bridge from the past to the present time problem's been burned. It was burned by the rebels a long time ago. The only bridge that exists there is from the preclear to the past. Now, some kind of way or another, you have to throw a catwalk between yourself and the preclear in order to get him to walk a little bit on and clear up a little bit and make better that bridge between himself and the past. Only in that way can you get him to build a bridge between himself and the present, at which moment he'll find out he has a present time problem. Didn't know this before. Landlord's been demanding the rent for 2 months. He's about to be evicted. He hadn't noticed. We get him to build a cleaner bridge then into the present time environment because we've cleaned up the present time problem. And actually, what we're doing is an awful lot of swamping in the interest of getting a straighter series of communication lines. We should know where these communication lines should go and what they ought to lead to, and we should know what impedes them. break in the auditor's code impedes that communication line between the auditor and the preclear. You might as well, thinking in terms of a bridge as a communication facility, we might as well go out in the middle of a bridge and dump four or five carloads worth of rock as to break one or another parts of the auditor's code. See? We've just fixed up a bridge so it's inoperable by breaking the auditor's code. It's the bridge between the auditor and the preclear. Now, you just get your communication lines as straight as you can from the preclear out to the environment. A gradient scale of this is getting the preclear to put a communication line out to the auditor and then out to other people. As an auditor, you're standing there, sitting there, representing the rest of humanity with an invitation to him to communicate. That's what you're doing. As an auditor, you are actually a skilled individual as to the maps. What are the maps? The map of his reactive bank, the map of his ARC in general, the map of his various dynamics. You know what these things look like. You should rather easily plot these things out. You should be able to do it without halfway thinking about it. And by doing this, we get a preclear, not just into session, but into life. If we don't get him started into session, he never cleans up the first bridge. And you won't clean a second bridge until the first bridge is clean. So where is the first bridge? It's usually between the preclear and his reactive bank, if the preclear has not come to you for help. If the preclear has come to you for help, it is ordinarily between the preclear and the present time problem. And the preclear comes to you for help is simply started out with the present time problem. You don't have to do anything more. And the preclear who has no present time problem and yet is there to be assisted, of course, is the easiest problem at all. You simply just build a bridge between himself and the rest of humanity and the rest of the universe and other universes, and he's on his way. That is how it's done. Where auditing doesn't work, a great many of these principles have been overlooked. Thank you.